following program is a presentation of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio in iTunes.
Program that helps teach you options trading inside and out, basic to complex. This is Options Boot Camp, brought to you by SoGo Trade, an extraordinary value in online trading. Why pay more for the same trade when SoGo Trade can deliver for less? Options commissions are just $5 per ticket and 50 cents per contract, and just $3 for stock and ETF trades. Open a new account today and receive 100 free trades. Visit www.sogotrade.com to learn more about all our free trading tools, educational resources, and other resources available to you to enhance your trading experience. Remember, options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. For more information, please read the characteristics and risks of standardized options available at www.sogotrade.com. Now, let's get you into peak options trading shape. Here are your Options Bootcamp Drill Instructors, Mark Longo, Dan Passarelli, and John Critchley.
All right, I love that tune. It always gets me in the mood to talk about options. Welcome to Options Bootcamp. This is, of course, the show where we break down the raw options recruits and then rebuild you into bionic men, no, into options veterans. My name is Mark Longo from the OptionsInsider.com as well as the Options Insider Radio Network. And joining me for this episode of the boot camp are my fellow drill instructors, starting off with the man from the Market Taker Mentoring, a.k.a. Dan Passarelli. Mr. Dan, welcome back to the show. I hope you have your hat and your whistle handy.
Woo, woo, woo. Yeah, man, I'm back. I'm ready to go. Let's do some boot camping things.
Yeah, not too many verbs that go along well with that. We need to get you right. A whistle, too. We need to get all of us whistles. The faux whistles can only go so far. And also joining us, our other drill instructor here on the old boot camp, John Critchley, the options specialist over there at SoGo Trade. John, welcome back to the program to you as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. Kind of getting the hang of it now, so all ready to rock and roll.
Your voice is just dripping with the enthusiasm that we love, John. It's perfect.
Yes.
I love it. I can tell our listeners are just excited as we are, I think, to really dive into our basic training segment.
All right, Boot, it's time to get in line. What you're going to do is learn. You're going to learn how options work. Do you hear me? You're going to learn options trading inside and out, basic to complex. There will be no failures, do you hear me?
Yes, sir!
Pull in, prepare to learn.
Yes, sir!
All right, welcome to Basic Training. This is where we equip you raw recruits with some basic options training and some basic options knowledge. And in this episode or this segment of Basic Training, going to do something a little bit different. We've laid out a lot of interesting basic options concepts and really tried to give you a good framework for what you need to know if you're considering trading options or adding them to your portfolio. And today we have a little bit different idea for you. We're going to go back and look at and try to bust, in fact, myth busting. I'm not sure if that's a copyrighted term or not, but we're going to bust some commonly held myths and misconceptions that permeate throughout the options market, particularly for a lot of retail customers who are coming to options for the first time. They hear a lot of these facts thrown around, a lot of these bizarre concepts and ideas, and frankly, misconceptions being hurled at them on a regular basis. And it's enough to really confuse a lot of newcomers to the options business. So we're going to dive right in and start busting some myths. And the first one is one that is a very contentious topic, and it involves a percentage that is indeed hotly contested as well. And I think it boils down to a myth that falls around somewhere like this, that a lot of new options traders hear this stat thrown to them that somewhere around 75 to 80% or even perhaps even higher percent of options expire worthless every month. So therefore, the odds are stacked against you. If you're an options buyer, you should really be an options seller. And the people we see promoting this quote-unquote stat are not surprisingly typically the firms and newsletters that are promoting heavy premium selling strategy. So the guys who are out there riding iron condors, riding straddles, riding things like that are the ones really beating the drum around this statistic. But this number itself, maybe let's just start there because there's so much fluff and noise around what the actual percentage is. I've heard some separate things. Sogo, you guys probably have a certain number you've seen. Dan, you probably heard something else. Maybe we'll start there. John, what is kind of what is your take on this? First off, do you agree or disagree with maybe with this 80% expiring worthless? And then we'll kind of go from there. What's your take on this whole misconception?
Yeah, I completely disagree with this stat. According to the CBOE, which was a training ground for our two drill instructors, Mark and Dan here. About 30%, according to them, expire worthless. About 10% are exercised during the monthly or I guess be a monthly cycle or weekly. And about 60% of all options are trading in and out of the marketplace. So I think the 90% number is a complete myth. And even if the myth were true, it would mean nothing. There's a matter of how much you make on your winners versus how much you lose on your losers. If you make money 9 out of 10 times selling an option, but the 10th time you lose 20 times what you made, you'd be a loser. So I think the idea that 80% expire worthless is a very, very misleading stat. I have a little story. In 1995, when I was trading, guys, I was in a Lotus pit. And this stock had been a takeover candidate many times, many false alarms. Late one Friday afternoon, 1 week before expiration, this is the monthly expiration, the stock was $31 a share. And I had a position where I was short a few hundred of the 35 calls. Well, a broker came in and he bought a few hundred more of the 35 calls from the crowd at an eighth. I sold my share. He came back a few minutes later and he bought some more from the traders in the crowd. This time I passed.
Always a scary scenario when you start seeing that stuff right before
right.
The close.
But this is the crux of the story. Then he came back and he bid a quarter for some. I passed and I actually paid a quarter. I covered. Well, you guys can know probably what happened on Monday morning. IBM announced a takeover, a $70 bid for the company. Those calls I traded at an eighth were now worth $35. If you bought 100 contracts for $1,250, that was now worth $350,000. So the moral story is, how many times do you need to sell a contract at an eighth to make up for the one time where it goes to $35? So that even if 90% do expire worthless, be careful. Be careful selling options and thinking it's free money.
I'm guessing there were far fewer guys in that pit on Monday than there were on that Friday when they were selling those.
A lot of the traders covered because of the broker coming in. And if he hadn't come in, we all would have gone home and we all would have lost probably a lot more money. Because traders can sniff out orders like that, especially back in the day. Now the traders or the institutions have the ability to disguise orders. But back then, it was pretty obvious what the guy was doing.
Yeah, we used to have a saying on the floor of the SIBO that when the Goldman broker came running to your pit at 2:55 in the afternoon out of breath, that you just closed up your sheets or you turned off your handset and you just left because there was nothing good on the other side of that trade waiting for you. And it sounds like a similar circumstance unfolded for you guys. Dan, I could hear you grinding your teeth in the background there because I know this 80% stat kind of sticks in your craw a little bit too. So what's your take on this whole myth?
Yeah, it sure does. And I mean, you guys both basically kind of touched on it. I mean, yeah, the guys who are perpetuating this, it's a total fallacy. The guys who are perpetuating this ridiculous number, 80% or 90%, they're the guys who, they have an agenda and they're just, they're throwing this number out there without having any knowledge of what the real number is. And the real number is very accurate and very set in fact, and where the CBOE gets that figure specifically is from the Options Clearing Corporation. listed options are all cleared by one single entity, the Options Clearing Corporation. Every single option that's traded goes through their hands. And you know what they do? They compile data. And they have the unequivocal, very accurate, sole figure. And it is or somewhere around 30 or 35% of options expire worthless. That's it. That's truth. That's reality. Now, and John just gave us these numbers. But, you know, really, there is something very interesting to be gained here outside of this baloney about how many options expire worthless. And that is that people are focusing on the wrong thing. They're taking their eye totally off the ball of what traders should be doing. It doesn't matter how many options expire worthless because most traders don't hold them until expiration. 60 to 65% of all options are closed before expiration. You want to look at the big percentage of the breakdown to see what the smart money's doing? That's what the smart money's doing. They're closing their trades before expiration and not just letting it hang out there waiting for it to expire to make that extra nickel or dime or whatever your option's worth now. You know, because like John, that story that John gave, man, I've lived that before. I've got a great story in AFS was my stock where that happened. I imagine Mark probably has a story or two like that as well. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. It's a sucker bet to hold options until expiration. So, you know, you want to extract some useful, tradable, you know, things that you can do with those figures. That's what the smart money's doing. They're closing stuff before expiration, not worrying about how many expire worthless.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, that percentage itself is kind of, like I said, a hotly debated thing. I've seen a lot of those same numbers you have coming out of the SIBO. That's certainly not really where the crux of the matter is. The crux of the matter is in that people are, A, holding their options to, not holding their options to expiration, I should say, but really selling them out. So the percentage really is kind of immaterial. I think also for a second, it's worthwhile exploring the flip side of this, because this is kind of the approach, this is the pitch a lot of these options selling outfits use to try to lure you in. But we also saw for many years people using kind of the flip side of this pitch, which is the old options make money in any market condition. Come to us, we can show you how to trade options to make money no matter where the stock goes. And that's that pitch we saw used for years. You know, the old late night infomercial luring people in with the fancy cars and how you can't be wrong, very little risk kind of thing. And that actually is the polar opposite of this, which is essentially they were teaching people to buy straddles. And if you've listened to any of our shows previous to this one, you know just how difficult and dangerous of a trading strategy that is and how that type of position can erode to nothing as well. So there's been two very polar opposite pitches I've seen at play in the options market, the sell all options and the buy options, because how can you go wrong kind of pitch. And both of them seem to be at work, the former to a little bit less degree now, I think. But still, it's worth mentioning that if you see that pitch these days floating around late night infomercial or an ad or whatever the case may be, an online ad, just stay clear of that, because you don't want to get involved in whatever those guys are selling you, which is typically buying straddles. Let's move on to some other myths that are kind of interesting out there. John, you had an interesting suggestion here talking to a lot of your clients and your customers over there at SOGO who are coming to you with this strange misconception that for some reason selling options is a riskless or a very near riskless endeavor. And that is certainly surprising to me, because I've certainly encountered a lot of people who have the opposite frame of mind, that selling all options is the most dangerous thing you could ever do, and so they avoid it completely when there's certainly scenarios when you want to employ that strategy. But it sounds like you're seeing a lot of people who are the opposite. So why don't you walk us through what you're hearing from your clients and kind of debunk that misconception for us.
Well, one of the questions I get all the time, and it's because the retail customer hears this from the mainstream media. This is the idea about that Dan can touch on also, and you can, Mark, about selling downside puts. Now, we hear this all the time. Apple is 640, let's say. You can sell the November 600 puts at $15. And what's going to happen? The worst case is you own it at 585. Sounds pretty good, no? Hold on a second. If Apple is 640, you can sell the November 600 puts at 15, true. But what happened if Apple has, God forbid, bad earnings? No, that won't happen. Let's say Apple delays the iPad mini and the stock opens one day at 550. Well, now you own the stock at 585. You don't own it at 550. It doesn't sound so great now, does it? And I tell my customers, the key point is 90% of large outside downside moves are gaps down. And all you need to do is try this test. Look at the daily biggest minus movers or down movers in the day, and then look at the opening price of these stocks. The majority of the time, these stocks gap down. We all know it's quite rare for a stock to open unchanged and then create a 5 or 10% in a day. It does happen, but it's pretty rare. It's quite unusual. You know, companies are very aware about market-moving news during the day, and most of the times it's either pre-market or post-market, and certainly not an expiration Friday. Now, of course, we have exceptions where there is an FDA ruling or a court ruling or some macro event happens during the day, you know, in the world. But in general, you know, we have gaps down. So one of the biggest myths is you sell downside puts. The worst case is you're going to own the stock with the stock price, the strike price minus the premium. That is not true. Be careful when people try to sell you that pitch.
You know, I think it's interesting, John, you bring that up, because I think there's two very interesting viewpoints on that. One is, of course, you're right, that the underlying does tend to gap. And then, you know, when that happens in those scenarios, the downside puts could certainly be an unpleasant outcome, to say the least. I think the other alternative, though, is I'm sure you probably do this as well. When someone calls you up who is an equity trader and used to working limit buy orders in particular equities, I'd imagine you typically would counsel that person to consider using short puts as an alternative to limit equity orders, because at the very least, he's getting paid something for doing that, essentially that same trade. So I kind of come down on both sides of that fence in that sense. So when someone calls you up, John, over there at SogoTrade, and they say, hey, I'm a stock guy, I like working limit orders, do you try to counsel them into using I hate to use that term, naked short puts, it sounds so dangerous, but using short puts? I had someone once on one of my shows suggest the term ASET, alternative stock entry tool, for the instead of naked short. So I'm going to go with ASET. Do you counsel your clients over there at SogoTrade to use the ASET as opposed to working limit orders and stocks? Or do you say just to avoid it for these scenarios you're talking about?
Well, sometimes I do, but I want to bring up another point. I think Dan had brought this up in our meeting and in some of the notes, the idea of stop loss orders instead of buying puts. I know maybe this is a little off top. This is changing the topic a little bit, but that has to go back with the gap protection issue also. So if a customer wants to protect the downside, they'll come to me and say, why would I ever buy a put when I can just put a sell stop out there? Well, we know what can happen then, because puts offer the gap protection. So I try to counsel my customers to just educate yourself and be aware of what happens when you sell puts, that you may not get the 585 price, you may get 550. And if you put a sell stop order in there and the stocks gap down, when that stock opens, you're not going to get the 585 price. You're going to get a 550 or lower price. So you just be very careful what you do and just make sure you understand the consequences of your orders.
I guess if you have someone like that who's very, downside risk sensitive, or they're concerned about that, then you can also counsel them in ways to limit their exposure. They could short a put spread instead of just the put and mitigate their risk that way. There's a lot of ways you could walk them through that. But I think in a lot of scenarios, if someone is fluent enough in options to really understand what selling a short put means and what it means to levels of the underlying that you will acquire it in various scenarios, and if they're comfortable with that level, and if they know ways they can trade in and around that level if they do get the stock assigned to them, I think it's in many scenarios a preferable tool than to just continuously work the same old limit buy order in stocks that we're seeing people have been working for generations without any real change. Now, Dan, where do you fall on this? Do you counsel a lot of your clients and mentees? Do you counsel them away from limit buy orders and try to tell them to start using the short put, aka the ASET, to get into equity positions? Or where do you fall? Or do you try to keep them away from it because you're worried about this gap risk that John was illuminating?
Well, I generally try and talk people out of naked puts, short naked puts, or even for that matter, cash secured puts. Now, I separate the universe of people who will make an options trade into traders and investors. For traders, I think a short naked put is never a good idea. You're always way better doing a put spread. And the argument is, well, the put I'm buying cuts into my profits. Okay, fine. Then you know what? Here's what you do. trade two put spreads in one instead of one naked put. Your profit potential is the same and you have limited risk, you know, or maybe three, whatever. But as far as investors go, all right, now, you know, we're kind of talking like maybe you can make a case for the, what is it, the alternative, and whatever that acronym
is. The ASET, the alternative stock entry tool.
Right, I love it. You can maybe kind of sort of maybe make a case for that. But, I mean, I'm kind of with John on the gap risk, you know. I mean, if you sell it out of the money naked put, if the stock goes up, well, guess what? You just limited your profit potential and you didn't do as well as you should have. If the stock goes down a little bit, okay, maybe you can outperform. If the stock goes down a lot, you're really sorry that you bought the stock at that strike price, you know? So, I don't know, too much bad can happen and too little good can happen. I mean, I'm always a fan of limited risk.
You know, but you still have that same gap risk if you're just working a standing, you know, buy order in equity. I mean, we saw that with the flash crash, you know, where 60% movements were suddenly the norm. I think that awakened a lot of people to something they had previously considered to be riskless, which is just working an order. All of a sudden, they realize they're hanging themselves out there. And if they're going to do that, they should be compensated in some way, shape, or form, which I think brought a lot of people toward the dark side of the ASET or the naked short put. I think I'm a little bit more favorable than you two are on the whole. I hate naked. That just sounds so dangerous. That's why I like throwing around ASET, just a better way to describe it. But I think it is preferable in more scenarios, because if you're working the limit buy order, you still have that same gap risk and you've got none of the other elements that you got from using the options to your advantage and collecting, you know, some premium on that. If you're just one of these guys who's loading up selling 50x downside puts because you don't know anything about risk, that's a whole different story. And those people who did that in Netflix and all these other names that have since wiped out a lot of those people, they've had their comeuppance. But if you do it in a responsible fashion, if you know what the end point of this game is, if you can do it in some ways like you're talking about with your credit spreads, there are ways to mitigate your exposure in that sense that I think overall are preferable to just letting yourself hang out there with a limit buy order and, you know, roll the dice. You get filled or you don't. And typically if you get filled, it's usually gapping on the way down and it's not a desirable fill. So, and you got compensated nothing for that. So, you know, I tend to be probably a little more favorable than the two of you, but I can certainly see where you both are coming from. Speaking of out of the money puts, I think that jumps on to another interesting misconception about options that we encounter quite a bit. John, this is another one that you suggested. I think it's just really worth talking about here. And that conference last week, talking to a lot of very basic retail options traders and hearing their conversations and their questions, I certainly heard a lot of this similar type of thing. And there's this misconception or this belief that all these out-of-the-money puts have essentially higher volatility levels than your typical out-of-the-money calls, or even just in general, out-of-the-money options in general are just much higher from a volatility perspective than at the money or in the money options. I think there's a couple of ways we could address that. Maybe we'll start with the latter part first, which is that conflation of vol levels versus extrinsic and intrinsic value. We've talked about those two things on the show a number of times in the past. Of course, an in-the-money option having some meat on the bones, having some intrinsic value, whereas the out-of-money option being entirely extrinsic value, which is that it can decay to zero. So even when you're talking volatility levels on those strikes, it kind of gets away from that core concept that is all of these out-of-the-money options, no matter where you're trading them, are comprised entirely of extrinsic value. And so when you're looking at things like decay, you have an option that is out of the money that the entire value of that option can be exposed to and can be lost to decay, whereas an in-the-money option has some meat. That intrinsic value is not going anywhere. So you have a little bit more skin in the game, a little bit more meat on the bones. And people tend to conflate those two things right off the bat. They see high volatility levels on some of these out-of-the-money strikes and not realize that the entire thing is essentially volatility premium and interest rate premium and everything else, and not really realizing what they're getting, which is pure extrinsic value. So I wanted to throw that out there first. And now, John, I know you had your take on the puts versus calls. So why don't you walk our listeners through that?
A lot of customers will see that the out-of-money puts have a higher volatility than the out-of-money calls. And they'll call up and say, wow, that you know, I want to sell some premium here, and therefore the out-of-the-money puts are a better sale. And the first thing is, this is called skew. And why do we have skew? Well, because in general, I mentioned this earlier, large violent moves in stocks have a tendency to be downward in nature. whereas upward moves are usually more orderly in nature. And when the stock was higher, the institution and a lot of public customers have a tendency to sell, to do cover calls, to sell out-of-the-money calls to bolster a return. And they will buy puts, on the other hand, to protect themselves against these large moves. Now, the market makers, you know, the marketplace is a marketplace of supply and demand. So the market makers know this. So when the stock goes higher, they're going to lower the bids for the calls, and the put values will go higher, you know, in a volatility sense. You know, simply stated, you buy puts for protection and you sell calls for income. The simple supply and demand kicks in, and that determines skew. So to say they're a better sale to sell the out-of-the-money puts, again, we have more violent downward moves in general than we do upper moves. So be careful, you know, following that myth. And I want to say one more thing. There's a thing that I actually look at. It's called reverse skew. And 90% of the time, what I just said is true, that the out-of-money calls are less than the out-of-money calls. And when this changes...
The out-of-the-money puts are higher than the out-of-the-money calls, you were saying. Is that what you meant to say?
Yeah. When this changes, something is normally afoot. If an out-of-money call option that, let's say, is greater than 25 cents has a higher implied volatility, you see this, then an at-the-money option, at-the-money call, you know, call verticals become very attractive, but something might be afoot in the options. If you see the retail or you see institutions buying out-of-the-money calls above a quarter of, and they have high implied volatility, someone may think they know something. So be careful selling options, you know, at that price.
You know, that the name that everyone likes to talk about these days has certainly been one of the most prominent exhibitors of that. That, of course, is Apple. You know, if you ask me, and people ask all the time, what are some examples of this where this happens? The upside calls get some life beyond probably what they're worth. And we see this all the time going into Apple earnings. That upside call skew gets bid out of control for a variety of reasons, probably most prominently that just the hordes of Apple zealots come out and they can't fathom, like you said, John, that Apple can go down. So they load up on upside. They chase those upside deltas at any price. They pay ridiculously inflated volatility levels. And then, of course, the trade goes against them post earnings. Surprise, surprise. But that does make for very enticing verticals and things like that if you are a little bit more savvy on the option spectrum. But yeah, John's right. Certainly, if you see those levels, then that's something you should be cognizant of, particularly when you're talking equity and index options, because that's an unusual scenario. You're going to see things like that. And commodities and other areas where the skew is a little bit different, they have a much different type of skew than an equity or an index option does. But if you're looking at equities, looking at index options, it certainly is something to be cognizant of, because 99.9% of the time, you're going to see that volatility skew shape where the puts are bid up from a volatility perspective, the calls are depressed from a volatility perspective because of so much paper flow coming in, institutional funds buying puts, writing calls, retail doing the exact same thing and just twisting that skew out of proportion. So that's typically what we see. And that's also, I don't know, Dan, if you counsel your clients to do this, but that's one of the reasons why we've seen so many people who like to embrace the covered call as an income generation tool. Over the past few years, a lot of these people who do this on a regular basis, professionals, active high-end retails, have really started to migrate a lot of their liquidity down towards those in-the-money call strikes, precisely for this reason. They've seen the upside calls just deflated to hell for a variety of reasons. So much aggressive institutional and retail selling up there that the juice up there just isn't really worth it. So if you're willing to forego a little bit more upside, there's a little bit more bang for your buck to be had from selling near ATM and near in-the-money calls, as opposed to the typical 3 or 5% out-of-the-money calls that people used to like to write. Dan, is that something you work with a lot of your clients on, and maybe migrating their covered calls to something a little bit meatier?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's a guy who lives in my neighborhood, actually, who's a trader. And this guy, he's a very, very good trader. He runs a trading firm, real high-level stuff for a major bank, you know, big player. And I was talking to him one day about how he's handling some of his retirement stocks and such. And that's exactly what he does. Stocks that he owns that he's okay selling off, you know, not like if you own Apple at a $5 cost basis, you might not want to sell an in-the-money call, you know. But with the typical stock that you're okay selling, yeah, it makes a ton of sense, because exactly for what you're talking about. There's more volatility in the lower strikes, that means higher premiums. But, you know, the only thing I do caution people about is make sure you're paying attention to the extrinsic value of in-the-money options. I mean, I've had a couple of rookies call me up and say, oh, yeah, I'm doing these. I'm selling these in-the-money calls. You know, they're $5 in the money. Man, I'm selling them for like $5.10. It's awesome. Like, well, not, it's not really awesome. You know, it's just, you know, it's just a pure hedge. I mean, you're getting a dime of premium. It's not real exciting. So, yeah, under the right set of circumstances, I love the idea of selling at the money calls or even maybe slightly in the money calls and taking in some of that meaty extrinsic value.
All right, and next up on our Mythbusters show, let's hope the Discovery Channel guys don't care this one, but next up on our Busting Options Myths show, we have probably the number one myth, misconception, erroneous belief, however you want to term it. We see new options traders coming in. Most people come to options for the first time. They inevitably buy options for their first trades, and typically it's a call. Sometimes it's a put, but 99% of the time it's a call. And you'll see them typically doing this around earnings a lot of times, and they'll come in and they'll buy these calls and they'll say on XYZ stock or Apple, whatever the case may be, hey, I bought Apple's trading around 650, I think right now, 640. I bought the 700 call, you know, prior to earnings. And then earnings came out, the stock gapped up to 695 in the course of that day. And my option was at the same price or less value the next morning. You know, how could that possibly be? This is by far the number one question I receive. I'm sure Dan receives, and I'm sure John over at Sogo does. There's some variation on this question. And, you know, that kind of misperception reveals a lack of understanding of a lot of fundamental things, one of which we just talked about, which is volatility skew and the fact that as you rally up that strike chart, these options are going to decrease in implied volatility. That's just a known phenomenon of how options trade. But there's a lot of other things that go into that too, including overpaying from a premium perspective and a lot of other factors that combine really to make that one massive and heavily often repeated error. So maybe, John, we'll have you start there. I'm sure you have these people calling up every day with some variation on this same question. What do you say to people who call you up with this question? How could this possibly be?
Well, I always try to give an example. Let me give you an example of this. We have Goldman Sachs price at 120 today, thereabouts. The January 140 calls are trading at $1. The implied volatility, let's say, is 25%. The vega of this option is, let's say, 15 cents. And let's make the delta 15 cents also. And now let's say the stock rises to 125. And I'll get a customer saying, John, the option should be 75 cents higher. The delta was 15, moved $5. But how are the options aren't changed? What happened? How can this possibly be? Well, the answer is the most important component of the option pricing model is implied volatility. That's the most important component. And the answer is that the implied volatility of these options went down to 5%. And the vega was 0.15, they're 75 cents in loss. And again, we go back to what Mark was saying, and we've hit on, it's supply and demand. If you're a market maker and and the stock was higher and you have all these customers trying to sell you options, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to lower the price, and the implied volatility is going to be lower. Anyone would do that. Market makers provide a service, but they're trying to make money, they're trying to make a living. And that's probably the most difficult thing for the retail customer to understand. And we have to go over and over and over again why this happens. And sometimes the customer gets upset and you know, you're saying that, oh, your Greeks are misleading. And I try to go back and say, sir, the implied volatility options is paramount, is king. So just be careful buying cheap out-of-the-money options and thinking that, wow, rally $10, I'm going to make all this money. You may not. You'd be surprised.
And this gets into what I was saying on our last show, I believe, or maybe two shows ago, about how so many of retail, they look at the Greeks and they tend to focus on delta. And they buy those calls and they think this call has a delta of 32 or whatever the case may be. This thing is going to gain 32 cents for every dollar that the underlying rallies. And that certainly is the case, except for a number of these other scenarios where the other Greeks come to play. And that's why I say the professionals always are cognizant of vega and why retail really should be as well, because when vega comes to play in these kinds of scenarios, it can overwhelm delta in many different respects, and certainly this is one of them. Now, Dan, I know you encounter this on a regular basis as well, so what do you say to those people who call you up, particularly you? You're the man who wrote the book on the Greeks. These Greeks are a lie. Delta is wrong. I'm losing money on these calls. How How can that work? What do you say when you get that call, which I'm sure is very often?
Read the rest of the book, not just the chapter on Delta. You know what? I used to work. I traded on the CBOE for a long time. But then I used to work for the education arm of the CBOE, and I would literally get that phone call 3 times a week during earnings season, especially, you know, because that's when you can have some pretty good moves, obviously. I bought these calls and the stock went up and my calls went down. Your market makers are ripping me off. What's going on? I swear to God. I mean, it was like I had basically a scripted response in the drawer of my desk that I could just pull out and read. Yes, sir. Well, what was the implied volatility, you know, when you made this trade? Implied volatility? What? I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, I mean, people have to realize there's 3 really big important things that affect the value of your option. The underlying stock price, that's the obvious one. Time, that's, you know, the one that once you get past the basics, you come to realize. And then volatility. Don't forget to look at volatility. It can make a huge difference.
Well, I tell a lot of people who encounter this or who are about to encounter this, especially around earnings time, I tell them, think of volatility, particularly around earnings, as a balloon, you know, and as you approach this earnings event, things become by definition more volatile. There's more uncertainty around that event. So that balloon continues to inflate, continues to inflate, and continues to inflate all the way up to the actual event. And so if you're buying calls going into these earnings events or very near to them, you're buying when that balloon is almost full. You're buying at this extremely overinflated volatility level. And what happens after the event happens, once the event is known and the outcome is known, 9 times out of 10, if not higher, that balloon's going to pop. And all that volatility comes rushing in. And that high level that you bought, that big balloon level that you bought, is now gone. And what you're relying upon now is the movement of the underlying to save you. And so you have to have a very dramatic movement of the underlying to offset this balloon dramatically imploding. And so that's why you see so many professional options traders tending to either close out positions going into earnings or even favoring the short side, because it's just from that balloon deflation perspective, it tends to work more in your favor. You really only have a few scenarios where these dramatic movements in the underlying tend to outweigh the volatility implosion that occurs dramatically after earnings. So if you are going to be doing this, if you're one of these people who's looking to buy calls in, let's say, Apple prior to earnings, and by all means, beware of the balloon imploding or popping, because that is usually what wipes out a lot of those profits and what initiates those calls to John or to Dan back when he was on the SIBO, or emails to us here at the Options Insider, outraged that the Greeks would dare to lie to them. And so I definitely...
Can I just step in and
sure,
say one thing? You know, when before earnings and the premium goes higher, this is event premium, earnings premium, and we get the customers calling in complaining about that. But the kind of the funny thing is, from on this side of not being a trader on the retail side now, or on the brokerage side now, is that we don't get the customers certainly obviously not complaining when they buy the 600 puts for $1 and now the stock's 550. You know, so when you buy a cheap out of the money option going into earnings, going into some event for a low price, it's like a lottery ticket. And if it pays off, it pays off big. But a lot of times, they're not going to pay off, or they're not going to act as if you expect. So just be aware of that, that sometimes these out-of-the-money, high, low delta options, they're almost like lottery tickets. And they pay off big. If they don't pay off, you lose.
John, you're stealing all my lines from my top mistakes of options traders, which I think is a good subject for another show that we're going to do. We certainly will get into those lottery ticket type options, because they're called that for a reason. We used to call them on the floor for a reason, that because they have probably about the same, if not worse, payoff probability than a typical lottery ticket, or even your scratch off from your local 7-Eleven. I think there's a lot of other myths that we could all jump into here in basic training, but I know a lot of you want to chime in on the old show as well. So with that, we're going to curtail our myth busting for now. I think we'll get back to it in another show, because there's a lot of great topics to discuss and myths to further bust here on the old show. But right now, we're going to dive right into our mail call segment.
Mail call. Time to look at questions submitted by our listeners.
All right, and welcome to Mail Call. This is, of course, the portion of the show where we give you, the listener, a chance to sound off and let us know what you think, your questions, your comments. A lot of tweets, a tweet-heavy mailbag, mail call this week. Let's start off with a tweet here from @UncleJesse, and he writes, I love boot camp. It's transformed me into an options trader. Well, first off, Uncle Jesse, that's the kind of stuff we love to hear. I'm glad to hear that the show is working for you and hopefully arming you with a good blueprint for becoming a new options trader and some of the things you should focus on and some of the things you should definitely avoid. And so we're glad the show is working for you. He goes on to say, I'm also new to SogoTrade. Can John explain why his platform is the best for options traders? And he writes next to it, commissions aside. And John, this is obviously a question for you. This is a variant on a question we've received a number of times since this show has started. People are writing in, they're learning about Sogo for the first time, listening to the show from seeing it on our site. And they're writing in with other questions about what you guys have to offer. I know a lot of the mentions we haven't even on the top of this show about the 100 free trades and other things. And that's enticing to a lot of people. But other people also want to know some of the other elements that make SogoTrade unique for options traders. So maybe in a few words here, why don't you explain to Mr. Uncle Jesse and the rest of our listeners just why, if you're a new options trader or even a more experienced options trader, why Sogo is a compelling choice for you?
Yeah, sure, Mark. As I said in the first episode, I came into SogoTrade in 2009 after trading for about 20 years on the option floors, and I was brought in to help fine-tune the options platform, and that was created by our developers here. And the first thing I wanted to do was make it easy and intuitive, and we succeeded in doing that. We have a platform where there's you can very easily customize the platform. There's many available settings. Like, for example, on the option chain, Mark, you can choose up to 12 different chain types. You can look at calls and puts, calls only, puts only, and many more options. You can also look at 20 different strategies. Let's say you're a trader and all you do is trade straddles. Well, you can look at the chain page, and it will only show you the straddle market. That's pretty cool. That's pretty helpful. So we also want our customers to have the right tools. So we aid in the trading process. So we have the P&L calculator, the probability calculator, option calculator, and we have the risk charts tool, which I mentioned, I think, last week in the show, that you're able to see your Greeks broken down into chart form, your annual risk. So we also have a new platform called Sogo Online, which is this is for our customers who don't want all the bells and whistles of our advanced platform. This platform was designed for customers who want to execute their trades fast and clean and just want to buy calls, buy puts on a very clean, fast platform. So, you know, I don't want to overlook the extremely low commissions and our $3 equity charges, but why pay 2 to 3 times the commission rates when you get the same tools, simple, easy-to-use platform, and you can do it at maybe at a third of the price of the other guys?
You know, John, I think that those are all excellent points. I mean, particularly the pre-populating the trade ticket or the options chain with things like straddles. That's great for people who really have a very select strategy they like to employ on a regular basis, and they don't want to mess around with loading up the chain every time and then loading up the order ticket with that straddle. If they can do something like see their strategy pre-populated for them and have it pre-populated in the trade ticket when they're ready to go, the fewer button clicks, the fewer mouse clicks that they have in front of them, I know that's a great thing for them. I think just as an aside from me, I know the tweet really wasn't to me, it was more to you guys, John, but you know, to me, we obviously at the Options Insider work with a lot of brokerage firms, big and small, in a variety of capacities. And one of the things that impressed me about Sogo, made me want to really bring them on the show for Options Bootcamp as we were considering rebooting it, was the fact that they have a guy like John, you know, a guy who comes from the business and is involved day-to-day in their options side of their business over there at SogoTrade. You'd be surprised how many brokerage firms we deal with on a regular basis, large and small, who just view options as this kind of ancillary offshoot to equities. And so they add a minimal level of functionality. They assign a couple of guys to it who've never been involved in options, don't really understand the business in any way, shape, or form. And that's kind of their options offering. And that's what they consider is really enough to keep those few people that they have under their banner who are interested in options. They do the bare minimum to keep them. And that's all they're really interested in. So if you're an options trader, you want a broker that really focuses and emphasizes options and understands the needs of that options trader. And, you know, so a firm to have someone like John over there, you know, spearheading their options efforts is a good thing, particularly if you're an options trader or you want to be an options trader.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the shout out there. Yeah, again, it brought me in. We have an options team here, and I focus just on options, and that's what I've traded. That's where I live. So we're gonna have a line set up, a hotline for our customers that they can call in with any option questions and any margin questions. And we try to cater. You know, we're new. We're only 3 years into the option business, but we're trying to make a little niche for ourselves with low commissions, great service. And Dan came in and he saw our top customer service reps are right near me. So if they have a question, they just yell over to me and walk over to me. So we try to do great customer service also.
And I'll just say this without recalling any other things. Listeners can listen to the early episodes of Options Bootcamp. There's a reason why it's Dan and myself primarily on that show, because the partners we had on that show didn't have people who could come on and converse about options on a regular basis. So, you know, the fact that Sogo has someone on board who could do that is certainly puts you guys ahead of the game, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, it was a really nice operation when I was out there.
There you go. So even Dan is becoming a convert to the dark side, or should I say the blue side of Sogo.
and also Dan signed the book for us.
And there you go.
Our marketing gal here was very excited about that. She was looking to put it right back on eBay.
She's going to flip it. As soon as you locked out the door, Dan, she was flipping it for at least 1.5x, perhaps 2x. Face value. All right, next up, we have a Facebook question from Tim Stevens, and he writes, as a new options trader, should I focus my efforts on maximizing delta or theta? I primarily buy calls/verticals. And this is another throwback to earlier episodes where we've discussed this exact scenario. I know obviously what my answer would be. I think, Dan, I'm sure you have a very succinct answer to this question, being Mr. Greek, so perhaps I'll let you run with this one first. What do you say to our friend here, Mr. Stevens, who primarily buys calls and verticals? Which Greek should he focus on?
Well, you know, if you're just going out and buying calls, you want to have the lowest theta you can possibly have, you know? So, I mean, you definitely don't want to focus on maximizing it. You want to focus on minimizing it, I guess. And, you know, I mean, if your desire is to have just simply a leverage directional, you know, substitute for trading the underlying stock, then yeah, you ought to be focusing on the delta and trying to purify that delta as much as possible by minimizing the other Greeks, theta and vega and gamma, which a lot of times you can do using a vertical spread. I mean, there's certain trade-offs involved there, of course, but you can actually make your delta more relevant than the other Greeks using a debit call spread instead of just simply going out there and buying a straight call.
Yes, but of course you also should be cognizant of everything we just spoke about in the earlier segment about Vega and how it could throw a nasty monkey wrench into your delta plans when you least expect it. So if you are just buying calls or buying verticals, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess you're buying out of the money calls, out of the money verticals. So you definitely should be cognizant of what we were just talking about, which is volatility skew and the impact of Vega. And the moral of the story, as we said on the other shows, you can't just focus on one Greek. You mean one Greek might be more relevant to your particular strategy, but you need to be cognizant of the impact of those other Greeks on that Greek you're focusing on, and how they all impact, and if volatility should increase or volatility should decrease, what happens to your delta, what happens to your theta, and the other things that go on. So if you're just blindly, myopically looking at one Greek against all the rest of them, you're really missing a lot of the picture here. Next up, we have a tweet from Eddie64. He writes, "Hey, options drill instructors, I love the boot camp." Well, thank you, Eddie. I'm glad you. We have two fans here, Dan and John. We have Eddie and we have Uncle Jesse. So we're off to the races, two and counting. He writes, "I'm looking to hedge my portfolio, SPY puts or VIX calls." And this is a great tweet, a great question. This is something we've discussed at length on a lot of our other programs here on the Options Insider Radio Network, but you haven't had a chance to really discuss it at length on this show. I think it's an interesting question. I want to put it to you guys. This is kind of the old, kind of almost religious, dogmatic debate of, do you prefer a direct hedge for your portfolio, like buying SPY or SPX puts or SPX put spreads, or do you prefer the more once removed type of hedge, which is a volatility product like a VIX upside call or something like that? Dan, sounds like you want to go first. Dan, we'll get your impression on this first. I've said my piece on this a number of times in the network, so it's time for you guys to sound off.
I would say that to answer this question, you almost kind of have to look at it as like a game theory type question. You know what I mean? Like prisoner's dilemma, that kind of thing. Basically, if someone is asking this question, the answer for that person is SPY or SPX puts. If you know enough where you don't have to ask that question, the answer is probably VIX calls. And I say that somewhat facetiously, but, you know, you can hedge it either way. Buying some index puts is much simpler, much more straightforward, pretty clean cut, not too hard to figure out. Maybe you can do it a little bit more efficiently with VIX calls, but boy, unless you're really got it dialed in and you really understand the product, there's an incredibly high likelihood of you screwing it up and being either way underhedged or way overhedged, and you should definitely not think about it until you get more than enough education to not even have to ask that question.
John, where do you fall on the direct versus indirect hedge debate?
You know, for most of our retail customers, when they call up and they ask this type of question, I actually skew more towards SPY puts. And there's you know, three different reasons. The VIX options, like other index options, are cash settled. And this confuses some retail customers. What does that mean, cash settled? So I have to explain that. And the VIX is also, as we know, an index. It can't be traded. That confuses people. And then there's also the expiration. The expiration is on the Wednesday, the 30 days prior to the third Friday of next calendar month. That even confuses me. So for a straightforward hedge for most retail customers, SPY puts is what I would lean towards. And I think Dan's 100% right. For the more advanced trader, for the more esoteric trader, I may trade the VIX calls. But for the more retail guy, stick with the bread and butter, the spider puts. They're an ETF. They trade. It's easier to understand. It's an extremely liquid market. So that would be my answer.
You know, this is an interesting one. And I encourage you, Eddie, and all the rest of our listeners here who are curious about this, to check out our show on the network, Volatility Views. We get very deep into the weeds on discussions just like this. And I think for a lot of us here on the show, we come from the market-making side of the fence. So for whatever reason, a lot of us tend to prefer that direct hedge. It makes a lot more cognitive sense to us. It moves much more directly with the underlying. So it functions much better for most of the typical hedging scenarios that you would want. We've seen a lot of interesting research, though. Just to summarize some of the talking points we've had from Volviews, there has been a lot of interesting research of late on how VIX can perform. And 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, the direct hedge is going to outperform the VIX call, the VIX upside bet, because it isn't a direct hedge. It kind of moves on its own to its own drummer. But where the VIX really shines is in those dramatic moments, in those quote-unquote oft-used, overused cliches, black swan moments. And when those things, when everything's hitting the fan, that the VIX will be 3x, 4x what you're getting on the direct downside put spread. And so 9 times out of 10, the VIX calls are going to underperform and going to be a worse hedge. But if you aggregate them over time and average them with these dramatic events, the level of outperformance on those dramatic events tends to bring the VIX more closely in line, or perhaps even outperform in some scenarios the direct S&P puts. I've seen some interesting studies on whether you should use VIX verticals versus VIX calendars. There's all kinds of really intricate debate and analysis going into this this topic, which is far more than we can get to in just a few minutes here on this basic education show. But like I said, this is a very fascinating topic, and I encourage you, like I said, to check out Volviews if you are interested in this subject. But for the most part, I agree with Dan and with John here that if you're looking at this question or even cognizant of this, really lean towards the SPY puts. Only in a few scenarios are the VIX calls really going to outperform. We have so many questions here. Maybe we'll wrap it up with a couple more really quick here in the old boot camp. First off, tweet from Thessa, at Thessa. He writes, "SoGo, thanks for bringing back boot camp. It's my favorite show." So a lot of love for boot camp and for SoGo this week. He asked a question. I guess I love reading between the tea leaves of the Twitter abbreviations. I'm assuming he's talking about portfolio margining. He wants to know, do you offer portfolio margining over there at SoGo, John?
Yes, right now we are in the process of getting approval for portfolio margining. Portfolio margining requires, I think, $125,000 account. There's a big capital requirement. But as Dan and Mark know, when I was working on the floor and I had my own firm, portfolio margin is all I knew. So I'm very familiar with that. It's an extremely fair way to do margin, especially for large accounts. But we're still in the regulatory process. There's a process that we have to go through to get it. And we hope to have it soon, but it's going to be for a very few select customers that have big portfolios and are very well capitalized.
Yes, good point. It takes a lot of capital to qualify for portfolio margining, but if you can, it's certainly a worthwhile thing to do because it's a much more intuitive way to margin your account from a trading perspective than what is currently on offer for smaller accounts out there. The other half of his tweet is a little bit longer. Maybe we'll hold on to the second half of his tweet about weekly covered calls versus monthly versus the commissions. Maybe we'll hold on to that for another show. That's a good question. But I think we'll close off on a question that is quick, and I think it'll probably be near and dear to Dan's heart. We have a tweet from Astro X. He writes, "What is your favorite options book for beginning/intermediate options traders?" I can't think of any books that would come to mind immediately that would be suitable for beginning/intermediate options. Dan, do you have any that you can recommend?
You know, Astro X, as a matter of fact, I do. I have a couple of books out there myself. One is called The Market Taker's Edge, which kind of explains the idea of trading for statistical advantage. And try and make it interesting. Tell some stories from down on the trading floor, and I think you'll like it. As well as Trading Option Greeks, the second edition has just been released, I think a couple weeks ago. And I think that's a great one for anybody really looking to bone up on options knowledge.
Of course, you can find links to those on markettaker.com, as well as good old Amazon to search for Dan Passarelli, Passarelli. For those two books. Yeah, those are two of your best choices, I think, for a lot of people who are looking to come to these, understand the Greeks. Of course, once you read Dan's books, there's some others that we like. I think, Dan, you probably, I know I certainly was when I first walked onto the trading floor. My firm handed me a copy of the Bible, Natenberg, Option mm-hmm. Volatility and Pricing, Sheldon Natenberg, which is still, for a lot of floor traders and former market makers, is very much the Bible. It's the book we all cut our teeth on from an options perspective. And that one is still out there. You can still get it. It's not exactly, it's a good nighttime reading. It'll put you to sleep pretty quick. It's very dry, but it will walk you through a lot of these concepts in a little bit more depth. So when you read Dan's books, you have a good handle on the Greeks and how they work, then you could step on to some of these other books like Natenberg's book that really will take some of those concepts and walk you through some scenarios of how to employ them, how to employ things like volatility we've talked about, things like volatility skew, and all these other fun concepts we hit on the show. John, you have any quick favorites?
Yeah, can I mention too, when you're done reading Dan's books and the copy here that he gave us, I'm reading right now, it's really fantastic. A very popular book is the Lawrence McMillan book. That's like besides Natenberg, that's a Bible too. Options as an investment. And there's also one from a ex-Amex trader, a lot of SIBO traders we're talking to. Adam Warner has a book out there that's pretty good also. But I would go with Dan's first, and then when we get done with those, go to these other two maybe.
I didn't know Adam was a former Amex guy. So it's interesting. But, you know, listeners, if you like Larry McMillan's book, I also encourage you to check out the episode of Volatility Views where he was on the show. One of our guests. That show has had a phenomenal string of guests over the past year or two, and I encourage you to check it out. I don't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but just search for Larry McMillan. We talked to him about a lot of these great concepts, and certainly his book is another one a lot of people hold very near and dear when it comes to options education. Well, thank you for that question, Astro X, and all the rest of you who wrote in and tweeted in to us here in the old mail call. We love having you guys sound off and join us here on the show. If you'd like to join Astro and all the rest here, and then by all means, you can post comments on our comment system on the optionsinsider.com. You can also send us tweets at options on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook, or just shoot us an email, questions@theoptionsinsider.com. Just put question for Options Bootcamp in the subject line so we know which show you're referring to. And unfortunately, that's going to do it for the mail call segment. It's also going to do it for this episode of Options Bootcamp. Man, the time flew. I love busting options myths. I think this is a great subject for the show. I certainly want to get back to it in future episodes. But before we wrap up here. Of course, I gave the listeners ways they can get in contact with us here at the Old Options Insider to send us questions or comments for the show. But Dan, why don't you give our listeners where they could find you as well as what's going on over in the land of market taker mentoring?
Sure, we've got lots and lots and lots going on. You can find more about Market Taker by visiting markettaker.com. It's two words, market like stock market, taker like take something, two T's in a row, markettaker.com. And yeah, you can contact us through the website. We've got lots of great free content so that you can get some great quality education. And we've got some classes that you can sign up there as well, including our group coaching class, which is really, really popular.
All right, last and certainly not least, our friends over at Sogo also have a lot going on over at SogoTrade.com. So, John, why don't you let our listeners know about what's going on at Sogo? And I also found a fun little landing page some of our listeners might be interested in, which is, of course, our Options Bootcamp landing page here on the Sogo Trade website. So if you want to hear this show or some back episodes, you can find them over on SogoTrade.com. So, John, what is new and what is coming up in the land of Sogo Trade?
Well, we, of course, put up the Options Bootcamp landing page. If anyone wants to contact me directly with any questions, you can just email me at options@SogoTrade.com. We're also on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Sogo Trade Option. And about a week or two, we're gonna launch our options blog, which I'll be writing some of my other option people here. And we're hoping to have some maybe webinars and seminars in the next month or two, and we're really excited about that.
Yes, if you like what John had to say here on the show, you can find a lot of his articles on the optionsinsider.com, where he gets into the nitty-gritty of a variety of options topics. I believe some of your recent articles had to do with Apple and the SPY dividend debacle and a lot of other hot, recent, cutting-edge topics from the world of options, John. And like I said, listeners, I encourage you to surf on over to SogoTrade.com, kick the tires for yourself, open up an account, and see if it is for you. You can also, of course, find all of our previous episodes of Options Bootcamp. Just look for the little Options Bootcamp logo there on the website, and you can click on it and find the old episodes. All right, that's going to do it for the Old Options Bootcamp. But Dan and John and I will see you next time with more options myths and more options misconceptions and perhaps more fun things to bust. So we'll see you next time right here on Options Bootcamp.
Options Bootcamp is brought to you by SogoTrade, an extraordinary value in online trading. Why pay more for the same trade when SogoTrade can deliver for less? Options commissions are just $5 per ticket and 50 cents per contract, and just $3 for stock and ETF trades. Open a new account today and receive 100 free trades. Visit www.sogotrade.com to learn more about all our free trading tools, educational resources, and other resources available to you to enhance your trading experience. Remember, options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. For more information, please read the characteristics and risks of standardized options available at www.sogotrade.com. Options Bootcamp is produced by the Options Insider, Inc. All rights reserved.
The preceding program was a presentation of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com/radio or search for Options Insider Radio in iTunes.